It's an honor for me to be here this morning with you, and I'm so pleased that I could come and talk to you and get to meet some of you, so thank you for this opportunity. Hitler and Dietrich Bonhoeffer. What a topic for a sermon. It could be a title for a lecture or an historical discussion. It could also be a boring interpretation of someone we know about and someone about whom we know nothing. I hope it is not too boring, and if you don't know much about Hitler or Bonhoeffer, please don't feel left out. Perhaps by the end of this short time together, we will all know a little bit more about these two historical figures, and maybe we can understand a little more about God and humanity. I have not done a lot of research on Hitler for this sermon, but it's my guess that most of us have some knowledge about him and the devastation he caused in Germany. When I think of Hitler, I think of great hatred and the epitome of evil. In a different setting, I would like to ask each of you what your thoughts are on Hitler, because I'm sure it could create quite an interesting collage of images. Since we aren't in a space where we can do that easily, I trust that we all have some ideas we could share about Hitler. Dietrich Bonhoeffer, on the other hand, may not be someone with whom we are familiar. Before I came to seminary, I had never heard about him. To be perfectly honest, when I did hear about him, I thought he was just another dead German guy that wrote about theological things. I mean no disrespect to anyone who is male or of German heritage. But at Eden, a school founded by German missionaries, we talk about a lot of German guys. When I started to pay attention to Bonhoeffer and what he did, my opinion changed, and I realized he was someone I wanted to know more about. Here is a brief summary of Dietrich Bonhoeffer's relatively short life. He was born into an affluent German family on February 4, 1906. He had a twin sister named Sabine. They had six other siblings. He studied theology in a top-tier German university. According to one source, he chose theology not so much because it was a study about God, but because he saw it as a rigorous subject. He graduated from Union Seminary in New York and also taught there for several years. He was ordained in the Lutheran Church and served two churches in London. This was in the 1930s, during the rise of Nazism in Germany. Bonhoeffer could have remained in the United States, but chose to return home. After Hitler's rise to power, he returned to Germany and became a member of the Pastors' Emergency League to oppose the state church being controlled by the Nazis. Because of his work with the resistance movement, Bonhoeffer was eventually arrested by the Nazis. He was taken to Tegel prison on April 5, 1943. Over the next 2 years, he was transferred to Prince Albrecht Strauss prison, Buchenwald, Regensburg, and Flossenbürg. He, his brother-in-law, and two other members of the Abwehr, a German military intelligence agency organized to assassinate Hitler, were all hanged on April 9, 1945. One of Bonhoeffer's older brothers and another brother-in-law were executed on April 23, 1945. Adolf Hitler committed suicide on April 30, 1945, and Germany signed an unconditional surrender on May 7, 1945, less than a month after Bonhoeffer was executed. So, we all know about the atrocities committed against the Jews and many other people during the Holocaust, but that's history, right? It's all in the past, and humanity has improved so much since then. Why is this Bonhoeffer person of interest to us some 62 years after his death? He isn't any more or less important than the millions of other people who died in the Holocaust. He is only different in that we have some record of what he tried to do. He tried to assassinate Hitler and tried to stop the suffering and persecution of his countrymen. He is certainly not the only one who fought against Hitler, but he is one of the few who left a record of what he tried to do and what he thought of his own actions. Dietrich Bonhoeffer was a pacifist. He thought his actions ethically right because so many people were dying, but morally wrong and sinful. In his book, What About Hitler?, Robert Brimlow discusses what can be done in the face of such suffering and mass murder. Are we to simply stand by and watch because it is better to be uninvolved? Should we follow a path like Bonhoeffer and take a stand, even if we feel it is sinful? In Brimlow's opinion, Bonhoeffer felt God had placed the responsibility on him to kill Hitler, but that it was still a sin. He, Brimlow, struggles with the notion that we can be faithful to God and follow God's intentions for us and still be sinful in that act that God has asked us to do. Brimlow states, "It is not clear to me that God has laid responsibility on us for the course that history will take. But if we are responsible for history, Bonhoeffer's dilemma would shake my faith much more deeply." As is obvious from the meditations he's sharing in the book, he says, "I am confused by God's word and reluctant to follow, even when I fully understand what God means. Yet, even considering my own willfulness and limitations, I cannot bring myself to believe that there are situations in which being faithful means that I must sin." Well, must we sin to be faithful to God? Is God some kind of immortal trickster who constantly sets us up to fail? And what about Hitler? As people of faith, does the presence of people like Hitler in our world mean that there is no God or that God doesn't care about us? Again, this would be a place where audience participation would be helpful. I don't have answers to these questions, and I find when I begin to think about sin, evil, God's participation in the world, and how we are to respond, I have many more questions than answers. Seminary has opened more paths of thought for me, but it hasn't provided that many answers. It has caused me to continue asking questions like, what about Hitler? Why do children in the richest country in the world die of hunger? Why are women, children, and men abused in their own homes? Why is there hate in our world against so many people? The pain of the world isn't only a distant event that Dietrich Bonhoeffer saw in Nazi Germany. It is present and palpable in almost every corner of our world today. This isn't something I have to tell you because you already know. It is on the news, in our neighborhoods, and sometimes in our very lives. Some of us have known evil and pain intimately. It isn't something we can separate ourselves from because it is like a skin-tight outfit that we just can't seem to take off. But, yes, I finally got to it. You have been very patient and came along with me on this downward struggle. And it's time to give you a foothold to help you catch your balance and start climbing back up before we all crash to the bottom. It is my constant hope and prayer that God is with us. Not necessarily with us in the respect that God can solve all our problems and completely fix the world. I think there is a spark of God in each being on this earth. Not just in humans, but in dogs, flowers, and rocks, too. Every bit of creation has a tiny spark of God in it. That spark can be nourished and grown with love and care, or it can be snuffed out by evil and pain. We can offer others hope to strengthen them, or we can beat each other down. God has given us each a piece of God's self so that we can fix the world and lift each other up. By saying this, you may view me as simply naive. I am not a cockeyed optimist, as it says in the song from South Pacific. I don't see the world as a place where everything can be fixed overnight and all the ills can be put to an end. I'm actually pretty cynical. I saw a friend yesterday and I told her what I was preaching about. She is also very cynical and asked me what difference Bonhoeffer actually made. He didn't succeed in his mission, so what difference did he make? I told her he made a difference because he was willing to stand up and say no. No, I will not sit idly by and watch my fellow Germans be killed. No, I will not remain silent in the face of such evil and injustice. It is not easy to say no, especially in the face of such overwhelming evil, and perhaps Bonhoeffer's actions are not the best for us to follow, but we can all start small. Like I tried to demonstrate to the kids this morning, the ripple effect really works, and the circles grow wider from the one pebble we toss into the water. Bonhoeffer asked the question, we have been silent witnesses of evil deeds. Will our inward power of resistance be strong enough for us to find our way back? Will the spark within each of us be strong enough to allow us to toss in a pebble and watch the spreading ripples? Or will we let doubt and evil overcome us all and keep the pebble in our hand and hope that someone else drops in their pebble? To close today, I would like to read you the poem, The Summer Day by Mary Daly. A friend sent me this poem last year when I had done a very difficult and hard thing. I had been holding a lot of pebbles in my hand for a long time in case I needed them to protect myself, and I finally let them drop in the water. Daly writes, who made the world? Who made the swan and the black bear? Who made the grasshopper? This grasshopper, I mean. The one who has flung herself out of the grass. The one who is eating sugar out of my hand. Who is moving her jaws back and forth instead of up and down. Who is gazing around with her enormous and complicated eyes. Now she snaps her wings open and floats away. I don't know exactly what a prayer is. I do know how to pay attention, how to fall down into the grass, how to kneel in the grass, how to be idle and blessed, how to stroll through the fields, which is what I have been doing all day. Tell me, what else should I have done? Doesn't everything die at last and too soon? Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? So I ask each of you, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? I hope you fan a few sparks and drop a few pebbles, especially the ones that are weighing you down.